From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Alston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where last month, as you may remember, 500,000 Massachusetts households lost power when a nor'easter ripped through coastal New England. Some were without electricity for 4 days. It was the largest outage since an October snow bomb hit the region a decade ago. Now, scientists warn as the climate changes, we can expect more frequent and powerful storms to disrupt the electric grid. To plan for a more resilient energy future, two environmental justice communities in the Commonwealth are building the nation's first cloud-based microgrids. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman has been reporting on this, and he joins us now. Hey, Bruce, how's it going?
Hey, good, Paris. Thanks.
Thanks for being with us. So this sounds really cool, but I have to admit, I have no idea what exactly a microgrid is, and a cloud-based one at that.
Right. Well, you know, basically a microgrid, which we've had for years. The military's big on these things. They're backup systems. They incorporate solar panels, green power generators, battery storage, and a controller that controls the system so that these buildings that have these microgrids can detach from the utility and produce their own power. You know, so if the lights go out, you've got power. You know, basically think of it as energy islands of resilience. Now, this new cloud-based system creates archipelagos of islands. They're buildings that are linked by software in the cloud so that buildings that aren't contingent, they're not attached by wires, can operate as one system. It's a little hard to get your head around, but here's David Dayton. He designed the system that's going to be used here.
As more and more buildings join, my power plant gets bigger and bigger, right? So you have 100 kilowatts over here, 100 kilowatts over there, and 100 kilowatts at an apartment, a health center. Now you're up into the megawatt range. You're talking about serious power.
Ah, so it sounds like they're kind of like a power plant. Is that right? I mean, if you can link them together and then they have stored energy, can they also feed that back to the grid and make money off of it?
Well, sort of. They're essentially a virtual power plant. Think of it this way. The big advantage is when electricity demand peaks on the grid, like in summer when people are running their ACs full blast, these microgrids can help lower the demand. They can help keep the grid up and running. So let's take an example here in New England. We have the ISO New England. It's the regional grid that actually has twice as much power generation capacity than it usually needs. It's got like 34 gigawatts. We usually use about 17 or 18 gigawatts. But it keeps all of that other stuff in reserve just in case for those few hours when, you know, on those few days when the regular plants can't keep up with peak demand. It's very expensive to maintain these inefficient plants, and the peaker plants are old and they're really climate polluting. So the buildings in this new cloud-based microgrid can island and relieve the grid of its burden, and they can get paid by the grid operator for providing the service of being peak demand that's not needed.
So which Massachusetts communities are doing this?
Well, that was a really important issue. Advocates like Green Roots, which champion the project in Chelsea, says this is about environmental justice and energy democracy that will power and empower people that are usually left out of these, you know, esoteric grid infrastructure decisions. Again, here's David Dayton. He talks about the philosophy behind this.
Energy is a human right. We want to create what I call fossil-free zones around low-income communities.
So besides Chelsea, there's going to be Chinatown. They're both going to get these new cloud-based microgrids. Both are environmental justice communities. In fact, all the neighborhoods of Chelsea are environmental populations. Chelsea is the smallest in size city in the Commonwealth, but it has an outsized environmental burden. For example, I'm sure you've gone by Logan Airport and you've seen those fuel tanks nearby.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Well, those are stored in Chelsea. And most of the region's heating oil, that's stored in Chelsea too. So is most of this rock salt that we use during the winter storms. And 20% of the residents are below the poverty line. Now, in Chinatown, you've got a low-lying region. It's right near Boston Harbor. And, you know, so it's in a flood zone if the climate changes. And of course, there's I-93 and the Mass Pike. And that cuts through the communities and produces air pollution. So that's an environmental justice community as well.
So will all areas of these two communities get these cloud-based microgrids? And what's the timeline?
Well, phase one in Chelsea will connect the police department, city hall, and 911 dispatch. And then it's planned to be expanded. Construction is going to begin, hopefully, this spring. And they think they're going to include making a climate-resilient internet, which would be a real first. And Chinatown is just a few months behind. Here's Lydia Lowe. She's executive director of the Chinatown Community Land Trust. I spoke to her, and she's behind the project in Chinatown.
I don't know if people thought we were for real, you know, or if it was just a dream that we were pursuing, but we did get cooperation from a number of these building owners to participate, to provide data so that we could really study what it would take. And we're now at the point that we're ready to start something.
And Lowe says they'll start with two Chinatown apartment buildings with affordable housing. And she told me that there are 10 more buildings that have expressed interest.
And then where do we go from there, Bruce? I mean, I know 2030 is a big year for some of our climate goals. What do you think the power grid is going to look like by then?
Oh, Paris, that is the trillion-dollar question. I'm serious. It's going to look much, much, much different than what we have now. The transmission is going to be different. The battery storage is going to be different. The power generation is going to be different. And it's going to be transformational. The question is, can we get there? Because we have to get there by 2030 to hit our marks so that we're on the way to net zero by 2050. Right now, pretty uncertain there, Paris.
Well, let's hope that turns around. That's WBUR senior correspondent Bruce Gellerman. We look forward to seeing the new energy future realized. And thanks so much for your reporting on it.
You're welcome, Paris.
Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. A Suffolk Superior Court judge has denied a request by the ACLU to stop the city of Boston from clearing out encampments along the Massancast corridor. The ACLU argued that the removals carried out by the city constituted a civil rights violation. Judge Janet Sanders rejected that argument, but did say that the city needs to improve conditions for homeless people before another hearing later this month.
Those elected to represent us perhaps have the greatest interest in making sure those at Massancast are treated with dignity and respect and afforded as much help as government resources.
Hours before the ruling was handed down, Mayor Michelle Wu did announce a pause of the ongoing removals. It's unclear when they might resume. Meantime, Mayor Wu is asking the Boston City Council to put $8 million towards making three MBTA bus lines free to riders for the next 2 years. Under the plan she's proposing, riders would be able to get on Route 23, 28, and 29 buses free of charge. The 28 bus has already been part of a free fare pilot program that launched this summer. City Councilor Kinsey Bach says she's on board.
This is one of the things where the city has an opportunity to say to the state, hey, you know, when you double down on this, it changes people's lives in a really positive way and shows the support that can come for the system.
If the council approves Wu's idea, the two-year program would begin next year. And finally, for the 50th year, Boston is getting the gift of a Christmas tree from the lovely people of Nova Scotia. It's in gratitude for the assistance Boston gave to the city of Halifax all the way back in 1917, after a massive explosion leveled the community and left nearly 1,800 people dead. Stacey Oxner is director of events for Nova Scotia's government.
This story is an important one. The pandemic has been hard on all of us, but we're coming together, recognizing this friendship that we have and celebrating it and commemorating it.
The tree is being set up on Boston Common today. A lighting ceremony is set to take place in 2 weeks, the first in-person lighting ceremony since 2019. I know we haven't even made it to Thanksgiving yet, but I gotta tell you, nothing gets you in the holiday spirit quite like lighting up a 60-year-old, 48-foot-tall white spruce. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since the last 2 months of the year, and holiday cheer, I'm Paris Alston. Be well. By the way, every day you hear us tackle news in Boston on Consider This, well, another one of WBUR's programs uses a wider lens. On Point, hosted by Meghna Chakrabarty, sets out to make sense of the world together. from the economy and healthcare to politics and the environment and much more. On Point talks with newsmakers and real people about the issues that matter most. Get the On Point podcast wherever you listen. Just search On Point and hit subscribe.